Jerry Oran. Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. What the heck's going on with this guy?
Well, Ahmadinejad is a longtime radical. He is a very serious politician. He is not a nutcase. He's a very serious, long-term expert. If you look back at his history, right now he's threatening, of course, Israel. He says Israel needs to be wiped off the face of the earth. He's denying the Holocaust existed. They're pursuing nuclear weapons in Iran. And as we'll explore here, George, they believe there's a messianic figure, like a second coming, that of this Mahdi who will come back if an apocalypse can be created. But just in exploring who Ahmadinejad is, he has a doctorate from universities in Iran, and what his doctorate is in is he's a traffic engineer. He is an expert in traffic engineering. He was mayor of Tehran. He is not wealthy like many of the mullahs who have become millionaires and billionaires, the mullahs being the clerics who rule Iran. Ahmadinejad lives in a simple apartment within Tehran. He drives an old car.
Is it guarded? I mean, does this guy just come and go, Jerry, as he wants by himself?
He's guarded, although he has lived a very open life until recently. In Iran, the regime is wildly unpopular. I'd say there's really only 20% of the population of Iran that truly supports this regime. The Orthodox and tend to be the poorer and more peasant section of Iran that support Ahmadinejad and the radical, ultra-conservative brand of Shiite Islam that Ahmadinejad professes. But still, you know, George, it's very different for Ahmadinejad to be this kind of a relatively poor individual, not aspired to wealth, but yet extremely zealot. And he was a member of the Revolutionary Guards back in 1979 when he was a young man during Ayatollah Khomeini's revolution.
I mean, was he at the U.S. Embassy? There's been talk that he was one of the hostage takers.
Yes, and George, even recently, even the last few weeks, six or seven of the hostages, U.S. Embassy hostages who were held for 444 days when Jimmy Carter was president, they've again claimed that Ahmadinejad was one of their hostage takers. And
then we should have arrested him, Jerry, the minute he stepped foot in the United States to go to the United Nations.
And, George, I was there at the United Nations photographing and watching and talking to the protesters. There were thousands of Iranians. You know, there's over a million Iranian expatriates in California. Very successful people, raised great families.
Oh, sure.
They adapted to the United States tremendously. And they're horribly upset with the crimes that this, you know, Iranian regime has committed against the people of Iran, and Ahmadinejad's personal involvement with the Revolutionary Guard, going back to 1979, Ayatollah Khomeini's revolution. They were appalled that with his human rights violations, that he would be allowed into the United States to speak with honor at the United Nations.
You know what's so sad, Jerry, is that the Shah of Iran probably was as big a violator of human rights in Iran, but the fact that he played ball with us, nobody seemed to care.
Well, and you've got a very good point, George. We've got to remember that when Ayatollah Khomeini first came in February 1st, 1979, from Paris to return from exile back into Iran, Jimmy Carter was president, and Jimmy Carter had shunned the Shah. He refused the Shah exile in the United States. And Jimmy Carter at least initially embraced Ayatollah Khomeini as a breath of freedom in the region, until, of course, Ayatollah Khomeini entered Tehran, took over the government, and then the revolutionaries, the students under Ayatollah Khomeini, seized our U.S. embassy and took our embassy personnel hostage. And, of course, then Jimmy Carter had to revise his estimate.
It also cost him his reelection.
Yes, you're exactly right, because Ayatollah Khomeini, in keeping those hostages 444 days, and George, you know, those of us who are old enough to remember, and I have to include myself in that group, remember the, you know, news broadcast day after day.
Every day.
354 days.
It's what made Nightline and Ted Koppel.
Yes, it did. That's exactly right. And the horribly failed mission when we sent helicopters into the desert and they collided with the C-130s and We had dead military U.S. personnel in the desert trying to rescue our hostages and photographed by Ayatollah Khomeini. This was, you know, just a few years after the fall of Saigon. It was truly a low point for the United States of America during Jimmy Carter's presidency and for the U.S. military.
Why? I want to talk about the Shah for a little bit because, you know, there's a history of Iran that a lot of people need to be made aware of. And again, our policies tend to go with people who support us, which is fine. However, we turn our cheek, Jerry, regardless of what these people do to their own people. I mean, they do commit atrocities as well. Saddam Hussein, whom we supported, committed atrocities. We turned on him. Manuel Noriega, we supported him. Then when he didn't play ball with us, we turned on him. None of these people were good Boy Scouts by any means. Why did we permit the Shah of Iran to do what he did with his organization? What was it called? SAVAK, which was as bad a undercover intelligence agency as you can get in terms of butchery. Why did we allow him to do that?
Well, George, I think you put your finger on it because you're right. The United States has given a pass to many brutal dictators and rulers of countries because they supported us. And SAVAK, which was the secret police in Iran under the Shah, was hated, was brutal, was suppressive. And the Shah was not any great winner on human rights within his country.
That's why he was toppled.
Well, that's exactly right. The people of Iran were, you know, resisted him and wanted greater freedoms. They wanted a greater return of power back to the people of Iran. The people of Iran have always wanted that. And the Shah, at the end of his reign, had lost touch with the people of Iran. We still supported the Shah largely. In fact, going back even to the Eisenhower administration, we had originally encouraged the Shah to develop nuclear energy. That has gone on for decades in U.S. policy. U.S. policy with regards to Iran is nothing to brag about going back into the 1950s. We're still struggling over Mossadegh, who was a prime minister in the 50s in Iran, who wanted to nationalize the oil, and the CIA participated in a coup to topple him. That's remembered worldwide and in Iran, and is a black mark on U.S. history in Iran that we've never totally been able to erase.